Blood, Rust and Steel by Stuart McBride. Read by Jane McFarlane. For my grandfather, William Bill McBride, 26th of January 1915 to the 27th of May 1984, who enlisted at the start of World War II, joined the Highland Light Infantry, then transferred from there to the 24th Lancers, driving tanks in Holland, France and Germany, fighting Nazis. He would be appalled by the rising tide of fascism, ignorance and hate that's sweeping around the world today. Warning. The following is not based on a true story, and anyone who says otherwise is lying. Carrion, crows. It begins with a scream. Alice glared at him from the passenger seat. I don't care. Pull over. Scott forced a smile. Pregnancy hormones were supposed to make people all maternal and loving and caring. But Alice had turned into a proper jet-propelled, pull over! Pull over! Her face went the same shade of beetroot that had preceded every explosion for the last 8 and a bit months, turning her freckles so dark they were nearly as black as the shapeless summer dress that made her look a teeny bit like she was wearing a bin bag. Scott did not sigh, because that just hastened an impending detonation. Instead, he peered out through the gritty windscreen. Fog. Nothing but sodding fog since the Aberdeen bypass. A velvet grey shroud that smothered the life out of everything. Should have made good time, but not in this. Could barely do 30. Too risky. What if they rammed into the back of something, even this early in the morning? And Alice was angry enough already. She jabbed a finger at the fog. There! A sign glowed blue at the side of the road, a capital P for parking. But just beyond it lay a line of gloomy orange cones with reflective stripes, flanked by no entry and work access only, blocking off the lay-by. So that was a non-starter. Maybe if we pull over right bloody now! Eyes clenched, teeth bared, spittle flecking the dashboard. So he did. Hitting the brakes, swerving between the cones, only maybe not 100% successfully, because a horrible scraping noise grated out from the front of the car. Then the nose dipped as they hit a pothole the size of Belgium, and the cone they were pushing must have tipped over, because that grinding gravelly sound worked its way from beneath the bonnet to under his feet, then the box-laden back seat, and finally the boot. Each crunk and skrrt like tinfoil on a filling. Then it was gone, hopefully not taking anything with it. He steered through the minefield of ruts, dips, scars, holes and dents, past a dark mound of gravel and another of macadam, then a pair of black wheelie bins, before coming to a halt. Scott killed the engine. Huffed out a breath as Alice struggled with her seatbelt, checked the rear-view mirror for evidence of the cone's flattened corpse. But the boxes, piled up in the back, blocked everything. Two whole lives, packed into a beige Citroën C1. Well, three now. Which was a thought. The car's dipped headlight still made the fog glow, picking out the curve of the lay-by, the semicircle of grass between them and the A96, and the angry pink spikes of fireweed with a dark mass of woodland beyond. Here we go. Pulled over. He turned off the lights. Gloom swamped the lay-by, like someone had just shut the lid of his coffin. He turned the lights back on again. Bastard thing! Alice wrestled the clippy end free and hauled off her seatbelt, snarling out her cruelest impersonation of him. Oh no, I can't be arse-stopping for you, Alice. You're not important enough. I didn't say that. I just said you might be more comfortable if you tried being comfortable with a foot in your bloody bladder. She shoved the passenger door open. This whole thing was a stupid idea. I should have saw